Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, I'm Sophie Ellis-Bextor, and welcome to Spinning Plates, the podcast where I speak to busy working women who also happen to be mothers about how they make it work. I'm a singer, and I've released 7 albums in between having my 5 sons, aged 16 months to 16 years, so I spin a few plates myself. Being a mother can be the most amazing thing, but can also be hard to find time for yourself and your own ambitions. I want to be a bit nosy and see how other people balance everything. Welcome to Spinning Plates. Hey guys, greetings from a surprisingly blue-skied day. It's, golly, what the hell day is it? It's Thursday. I've just done my first 3 dates of the tour, but actually it's also the end of a 6-day run of pretty solid work, because we did 2 days rehearsal, Friday, Saturday. Then on Sunday we did a gig in Holmfirth, up in Yorkshire, as a sort of rehearsal gig. Then first night of the tour was Monday in Birmingham, then Bexhill, and last night Bath. And today, day off, so I'm just walking back from school run. I got off the tour bus at 8, and then I got out of the house with the kids at 8:30, dropped the primary and the nursery, and now, oh, my little feet. They're sore, my feet are sore. I need a little rest. I'm looking forward to doing not very much today. I need a little rest so that I'm fit and well for Warrington tomorrow, Sheffield on Saturday, and just onwards, really. We've got 14 dates ahead, but the first 3 shows have been actually amazing. Really, really good. So I'm feeling really excited. It's been lovely in the crowds. I was just thinking about it on the way home, thinking, can I remember doing gigs with my first band where we'd be performing while they were still opening up the venue and stapling T-shirts to the merchandise board, and basically no one was there. So it's not lost on me. You know, over 25 years later, and got these lovely crowds. That's a nice feeling. Anyway, hope everything's all right in your world. It's, I hope you guys are finding a way to cope with all the stuff in the news. Sorry to talk about it, but it would feel weird not to, wouldn't it? It's so intense. It's so awful. Yeah, nothing much more to be said there, really. It's just so awful. Anyway, it's a bit noisier, isn't it? I keep seeing messages from people online saying, you know, just makes you feel very lucky to be under a blue sky, breathing fresh air, doing what you want to do, looking at the flowers, listening to the birds, all that sort of stuff. And it is true. As I walk back, I can see magnolias, I can see blossom. I think spring is on its way, people. That always makes me feel a bit optimistic. And this is the last podcast episode of the series. Another varied series. You can't say I'm not eclectic on this. And I'm finishing with a really lovely chat, talking to Becky, Becky Unthank, who is part of the band The Unthanks that she formed initially with her sister. And they are a folk band, and they've got beautiful voices. And I'm not sure if we spoke about it in our chats, but I met Becky because she came and sang at my stepdad John's memorial. And it was so beautiful when she performed, and she had to look out to a sea of people who started crying pretty much immediately, and she really held together. And she's just a very lovely, calm, she's got a very lovely outlook on life. And I always wanted to finish the series with this chat, because when I recorded it, I felt like it was like a audio, that is a noisy car, an audio cup of tea. You know, it's just cozy and reassuring and nice. I love talking to her. It was really lovely. She was not near me. She was up sort of Newcastle way when we spoke, up in the rolling countryside. And it was a beautiful sunny day when we spoke then too. So, you know, a lot of sunshine in this one. And I hope it makes you feel as cozy as it did me. And I will see you on the other side. Bye, darlings, in a bit. Yeah, that's quite a good place to start. So at the moment, you're putting together this online festival. When is it live then?
It's happening this weekend.
Ah, cool. That's nice timing.
23rd, 24th, yeah.
So this was something, yeah. Was it the first time last year?
It was the first time we did it, yeah. So usually in the winter, we run singing weekends on the Northumberland coast. So we've done it for, well, this would have been the 12th year, but we did it for 10 years before the pandemic. And we started off with one 12 years ago, just as a way of kind of doing something in the winter to earn some money, and to, like, we were touring a lot, and we were missing singing with people, with, like, in a pub or in a group of people. And so we started running these singing weekends, and we cook for everyone. We'll stay in a bunkhouse. Well, we stay in a cottage. They stay in a bunkhouse. And we do workshops.
Some stamps.
Some luxuries.
Some luxuries, yeah.
So we all kind of cram in a room together, and we teach them harmony singing and chorus singing, and we go on the beach and we do a concert. And it's just grown to be, over the years we've done more and more, and it's just grown to be such a part of our winter.
Yeah.
And we see the same people each year, some new people, and we've not been able to do that because of the pandemic. So we thought, well, we need to do something to just, like, engage with people and
yes.
to put something out there and get something back. So we came up with this idea of having this online festival, which we've called the Winter Onliner, just because we didn't know what to call it, really. So it's been nice, actually. I'm looking forward to it. Now I've done a lot of the, like, technical bits.
And when you say we, doing the singing group in the winter, is that you and your sister or all of the band? Like, is Adrian there too? And
yeah, most of the band. So me and my sister teach the singing and make the crumble. And Adrian does most of the cooking, and with the help of Neofet, our fiddle player, and Chris, our guitar player. So we all, and then sometimes various other band members turn up and help, and we're like, can you come and help us for the weekend? And my mum helps, and my dad helps, and my mum's partner helps, like, because my dad sings as well, and my mum's partner, Jim, they sing in a group together, my dad and Jim.
Really?
Yeah, I know, weird.
That's cool. I mean, impressive. I can't.
They've always sang in a group together. And then my mum and dad broke up, and then a bit of time passed, and then Jim and my mum got together. Anyway, years later, one big happy family.
Wow.
And
the true meaning of harmony in every sense.
Well, they're so helpful, because they're lovely and they know loads about folk songs. Mm. But they've got big voices. So we go along the beach, and we sing on the beach, and then we go to the pub and we have a big singing session. But I just have a small voice and I get excited, sing a loud song, and then that's it. My voice is wrecked. So my dad and Jim are there to like carry that bit of it.
Oh, well, you know what? That's actually quite reassuring for me to hear you say that about your voice, because I have exactly the same thing. And
Really?
Yeah, and it's always been something that I've kind of been a bit sort of secretive about, really, because I felt like, you know, if I was like really good at knowing how to look after my voice, that would never happen to me. But yeah, I can, if I'm able to be quite controlled, so like using in-ears when I sing live is beautiful because I can have real like clarity in what my mix and hear everything. But if I'm just with the band and really sort of trying to kind of almost match it, you know, sound for sound, like drink for drink, I just, it won't last more than one night probably. And then a lot of my top notes will be gone and that kind of thing.
Oh, I can totally relate to that. It's really, it's a bit stressful actually, isn't it? Because it's just having like a fragile kind of instrument that's like the thing that you need to do what you do. Mm-hmm. I think I've learned over the years just to kind of calm down a bit and not shout ever, and sleep and do those kind of boring things are the best.
Definitely.
For my voice, because it's just, there's nothing more soul destroying than being on stage and not being able to do what you want to do.
I know, it's so true. It like affects every part of you. You feel so vulnerable, and when you can sing and your voice is in good health, it's just a joy. You think, God, aren't I lucky that I'm going to spend this evening, I'll just sing. Even if I start a gig and it's not the gig I want it to be, or maybe the mood's a bit odd, or it might be like an odd environment or some, you know, strange place I'm singing, but if I can just think, no, I'm just going to enjoy singing for singing's sake, it's really lovely. But when your voice is a bit damaged and a bit vulnerable, just the whole thing of it is just like, just going to get through it. And you feel like everybody can tell by the look in your eye that that's how you're feeling. And actually, yeah, like you, I've realized that the worst culprit actually is pushing to talk over loud music. You know, so like if you've done a gig and then you want to go out to a pub, or you want to go out to, you know, dance somewhere, and you're sort of singing along, or you're trying to talk over the music, and then it's like next morning. Do you do that thing when you test it in the morning as soon as you wake up? Like, just check it's there.
No, I don't think so. I don't know. I think I'm a denier. I'm like, I wake up and I'm like, oh, by the time I get on stage, I'll be fine if I just keep singing and like humming to myself. But I know what you mean. Like I love going out and drinking after gigs. It's so fun. I love talking to people, but I have to measure myself when I'm on tour. Now I'm in my late 30s. Becoming. Yeah. A bit more sensible. Well, we'll see. I'm about to go on tour in the spring.
Oh, so, there you go.
After a long time not touring. So.
My mum calls it doctor theatre, by the way. That thing of getting on stage and then just like actually do feel better normally. That worry kind of goes. The adrenaline as well kind of kicks in.
Oh, doctor theatre.
Doctor theatre. Yeah. We sort of joke about that quite a lot. Like if Richard and I are feeling a bit off with something, he'd be like, don't worry, doctor theatre.
Oh,
he'll see you right.
Absolutely, yeah. It's like rising to the occasion, isn't it? It's like, right, okay,
yes.
Now's the time to pull it together.
Exactly, showbiz. So when you were talking about your family, I'd like to talk about that actually, because, yeah, is it right that both your parents sang around the place all the time, and that your mum was in a choir and your dad was in a folk band, is that right?
Yeah, so they are just, that they've never performed. You know, they're not professional musicians, but they've always just loved music and loved singing, and they got into folk music in the 60s and met in a folk club and took us to festivals all summer, every summer when we were kids. That was our holidays. We'd camp at folk festivals. And my mum just loves singing in groups. She doesn't want to sing on her own, which is I can relate to, actually. It took me a while to want to sing on my own. So she loves singing in choirs, and my dad sings in a folk group. But they always taught us songs in the car and at family parties. Like, everyone had to have a party piece. So we were just always encouraged to sing. It was never like you had to be good. Just everyone sang. I think it's a bit like that in the folk world, though. It's like the line between performer and audience member is a fine line. Everyone's just there and
and, you know, everyone. It's not like, I don't know, it's just quite inclusive in that way, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. And I think as well, the emphasis is so much on the story in the song. That really, it's not really about who's the best singer, but about engaging the listener. And then also everybody else has to be really good at listening in. And I once stumbled by accident into the middle of a folk session. And it was like we were in a pub in Ireland and we went into a back room. And it was very, very quiet in there. And there was someone singing in the corner. And then once she'd finished, someone else just stood up in another corner and started singing. And it just went round like that. And the room was silent apart from these lone voices. And sometimes there are a couple of people who sang in twos or threes. And it was really magical. And I wasn't really supposed to be there, but I sort of was completely captivated. And I was thinking about that a lot when I was going to talk to you, because I think that's what's so appealing about folk is the passing on of the stories and telling them and passing them down through generations. And I thought, now that you're a mother, is that sort of more significant, that idea of like the lineage of the music?
I think the whole... I mean, I definitely have consciously thought about what I enjoyed about my childhood and how I want my little boy Ren to experience some of those things. I think singing stories or telling stories is such a nice way to digest information. So, like, you know, big subjects like, I don't know, just like all the big stuff in life that it's hard to talk about. I suppose love and loss and big changes in your life, and to learn about those through song and stories, it gives it, I don't know, it's a bit less harsh. Maybe it can seep into your mind in a different way. Of, I think it's a nice way to learn, and I certainly I really enjoyed when I was a kid, and I think it's helped me as a grown up, being around people of different generations, and it not being like, okay, that's the grown up area, that's the kids area. Like, I feel like the folk festivals I went to, everyone was sort of equal. I mean, that's the extreme way to say it. I'm sure not everybody felt like that, but it did feel like I could have a conversation with an adult and they would treat me like with respect, and we were all in it together. We were all like sharing that music together, and I really like that. I've never been like afraid to. I've never been intimidated by grown-ups, I think, because when I was younger, I feel like a teenager now, thinking of my teenage self. You know, I wasn't intimidated to talk to teachers or to grown-ups, and I feel like that's given me a confidence.
Yeah, well, that's actually a really amazing thing. And I think it's funny because you're a little bit younger than me, but what you're describing almost sounds like it's part of a different era in a way, or like somewhere you'd get in somewhere that's a... you know, like a very sort of village community, you know, where there's not really any outside influences. So everybody is sort of, yeah, giving that authority and that space to each new voice that comes along. But that ability, as you say, to talk to different generations and feel like you're being heard as a kid, it's actually a really immense thing. That's not a little thing at all, is it? It's quite a big power, that, to know that your words have impact and your song has impact.
I think that's something that I'm already like, want to feel that I'm giving to Ren. I don't know. I'm sure I'll mess him up in all sorts of ways, but you know, that's a good start, isn't it?
I think good intentions is what we're aiming for, really. It's like, yeah, there's basically no way to not screw up. And I think that's like a broad thing to say, but I think once you sort of get your head around that, just doing your best is all you can do. That's actually like, it takes a lot of the pressure off, because there isn't really the whole idea of there being like sort of perfect way to do it is complete myth. And you could be
feels like an experiment.
Yes, and then you could be doing things in the sort of what you imagine to be a perfect way, but then you realise that you've screwed up because you haven't modelled failure. So you know, you've got to kind of be all things to all people, and also just be a human being in the middle of it, I think. So Ren he's the same, it's such a lovely name, Ren. And he's the same age as my little one, I think. So because Mickey's just turned 3, and Ren is he 3?
Ren, he was 3 in September, yeah.
I think it's such a great age, 3. It's like, objectively, like, potentially my favourite age, I think.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, because they're, like, able to chat to you about stuff, but they are completely unencumbered by common sense or rules. So it's like being with someone who's, like, completely out of their box all the time in quite a good way.
Yeah, it is lovely. I am loving it as well. Like, and I feel like he changes every couple of weeks. It's like, you're a new person. This is cool. This is exciting. And just like, yeah, hearing his ideas. He's like, Mom, I've got an idea all the time. I'm like, oh, yes.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. Having their own imagination and their own ideas and their own authority about stuff is really like an endless joy, I think. Just that freedom of their thought. And you're like, wow, you've had just had your own, complete your own take on something. And now you're going to share it with me. It's lovely.
I'm already like projecting into the future and thinking about how when he's older and he just won't even like ring me or, you know, because he's off, not because he doesn't like me, but because he's off living his life. And I'm like treasuring him already. Like,
yeah. Well, also I think some kids give off that vibe more than others. I know like my second kid, he's about to be 13. He must have been about, let's say, 5 or 6. And I said to him, will you look after me when I'm older? And he said, yes, but only for a day or two. I've always had this feeling he's just going to be off. Like, I will sort of see him occasionally, but the other day he was filling up a disposable camera with some pictures. And he said, I'm taking a picture of everything I think I'll miss when I'm older. And he took a picture of his brother. And I said, why are you taking a picture of him? You're going to see him. He went, yeah, but come on, in the future, only Christmases and birthdays, maximum.
Wow.
Yeah.
He's got a strong idea.
Very strong idea.
What his life's going to be like.
Yeah.
You're probably not going to be part of it. I'll see you at Christmas.
You're just on the side. You're just like, you know, I'll just see you occasionally when I really need to. They're not all like that. They're not all like that. I think it's like everybody's got their own version of it and their own degree of wanderlust and what makes them happy in terms of how much time they spend with their family. But judging from the family you come from, it wouldn't surprise me if he stays really quite well connected, I would imagine.
Oh, I hope so. But we'll see. He's his own person, so.
So what are your earliest memories of singing then and music? You're saying about car journeys and things like that and folk festivals.
Well, so I sing in a band with my sister and there's 7.5 years gap between us. She's older than me. So
is there anyone in the middle of you two?
A brother.
Okay.
Who's a year younger than my sister Rachel. So, yeah, me and Mitchell always sang together when I was little. And I suppose it doesn't feel like such a big age gap now, but when we were little, I was her, you know, tiny little baby sister.
It's quite a big gap, I think, 7 years.
Mm. And I never wanted to sing on my own. I only wanted to sing with her. And even when we got to, like, I remember some of our first gigs together, she would get quieter so that I would, so people could hear me and I would just get quieter. I've come a long way since then, but I was just, you know, I didn't want people to hear me. I just wanted to sing with her. It sounds so cheesy. I just wanted to sing with my sister. But, like, singing in harmony is just the most pleasurable thing I could ever imagine. When I was just talking to my dad about it last night because we were trying to sing a song together in harmony. But my dad struggles to stay on the tune if somebody's singing harmony. He just like wavers to the tune and they're saying, yeah, but you just do it and you sing it and you sing it and you sing it. And then you get to that point where you're just in it and you can hear all of the other parts around you. And it's just the most wonderful feeling. I don't know if you do much harmony singing, but I just love doing it. And
that sounds magical. I don't think I've done, I don't do much harmony singing. I've done it obviously where I sing my BVs and stuff like that when I'm in the studio. But actually, I think I'm a little bit more like your dad, potentially. I think if I do have harmony singing live, like if I'm doing a duet with someone, I think I get a bit worried about being able to say on what I'm doing. But then maybe, as you say, it's just not enough experience of it.
It's just like anything. It's just like, I think it's just the more you do it, the more that you get good at it. And
but when saying when you're really lost in it, you're not just thinking about the other vocals, but everything as well, all the music and everything. So is that how you hear it when you're in the midst of it?
I think, like, I'd say, so me, Rachel and Neofa in our band did an unaccompanied tour, just the three of us, no musicians.
Oh, wow.
And I'd say for the first three nights, I didn't even listen to what they were singing. I blocked them out so that I could do my, you know, I could hear the rhythm, the words, but I wasn't hearing their notes. I was singing my notes. And then by the fourth and fifth gig, and by the end of the tour, I could, it's just like, I can, my part, my singing part is just, it just comes out of me. I can just do it. It's like a muscle memory. And then I can hear their parts and just the blend of it all. And it's, I don't know how it sounds, like I'm like having some sort of existential experience. It's like, it is an amazing experience to be in such close harmony with just voices, and just kind of be swimming in it.
Yeah, it makes me think it's almost quite transcendental. Like you're kind of like something's resonating within you that's like a very sort of pure part of who we are. Just to get to be part of something like that. To be sort of swimming alongside these other notes and it just sitting in there. I mean, it sounds incredible, really. And that tour must have been amazing.
It was. It was really, really nice, particularly because I had a seven-month-old baby.
Ah, so this is what you did just after Ren.
And Neofa in our band also had a seven-month-old baby. We had babies a week apart.
Oh, my goodness.
So we took the babies on tour.
That is adorable. And also very, very wholesome and lovely.
Was, yeah.
So you come off stage and great. Find your little seven-month-old bubba's waiting for you.
Sometimes, but I have a very capable boyfriend who also came on tour with me, who's just like really confident about being a dad and just like, it's fine, I'll take him off. So he was very independent with him, and he'd like, you know, I'd express milk and he'd take a bottle to the hotel, and I got to go on stage with clean clothes on.
Yes.
And just like stand still for an hour and sing. It was like a huge like break from having a baby, you know.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Well, I was going to ask you, so what was happening in your life when you had him? What sort of stage, what was happening before that? Were you always planning to do that tour and then it just happened that you got pregnant and then your baby was there? Or was it something you planned after you'd had your baby?
We planned, the tour was actually planned for when we were due, me and Niamh were both due, so we had to put the tour off. So we'd already planned, I think we'd just done a, because usually we have a 10-piece band, but we'd just done a project with an orchestra. And so we're like, what else should we do? Let's do something really different and in scale. And singing in harmony unaccompanied is how me and my sister started off. So before we had a band, we'd sing at festivals and folk gigs, just the two of us. So that's how we started off. So we're like, oh, we always knew we'd do that at some point. Mm. So we decided to do that. And then we had babies, but my sister had already taken babies on tour, so we already knew it was possible to do that.
Mm.
Yeah. And I think it pulled me out of things a bit, actually. It was tricky at times, and I was tired, but, you know, every new mum is tired. And actually, I think it dragged me out of myself a bit. I remember the first day of the tour, Adrian saying, now we're gonna have to set off at this time, because the tech team need to get there at 2 or whatever, and me going, no, we can't set off then because that's not when Ren's nap is. And then being like, well, you know, we have to change ourselves. And I think it pulled me out of myself and made me realize you can do all sorts of things with kids, can't you?
Yeah,
if you have to. I mean, it was one of those things, it could have gone really wrong. I did do another tour a few months later, and that was much harder. And it's like, just sometimes it works out and sometimes it doesn't, but it's exciting to be able to like just pack, especially when they're teeny babies, to like bundle them away and go on adventures, I think.
Definitely. And I think actually that bit when they're little is actually the bit when they're the most sort of portable. And it gets much harder when they get older, I've found anyway. So when they sort of get, you know, they're moving around and they're a bit more vocal and they're sort of, they understand that, you know, well, if you're in a room, yeah, but there's a door there and through that door, what's happening there? But when they're tiny, they don't know anything other than the place where they find themselves. And then they just, you know, see what's there for them to be, you know, stimulated by in that space. And I did a tour with my last one when he was 4 months old.
Oh.
Which is why I said that thing about finishing the gig and finding your baby waiting, because that was how I did it. I'd get on the tour bus and he'd be normally like asleep in his Moses basket.
Oh.
And it was, I felt incredibly calm and happy on that tour. Like, it was the most sort of blissful tour I've ever had. Like, not rock and roll in any shape or form. It was just really, like, as I said before, wholesome. It's just like,
yeah.
I was touring and singing. I was with an orchestra, so I could sing really quietly at the beginning, and it was all, you know, harps and strings. And then I'd come off and there's this little buffer waiting, and I was like, this is pretty dreamy, actually. But
that's
it also helped me feel like me again, and I quite enjoy having those two parts of my head where I can kind of bed back into how I like to perform and what I like to chat about on stage and how I like to present myself, and then I can go and actually have that side as well. Like, for me, it was quite healthy. I enjoy getting back into that.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know, you have to kind of make decisions, don't you, when you have kids. You've you know this much more than me, because you've got so many. You've got 5 kids, haven't you?
Yes.
And then, but it's like, oh, okay, I'm a mum now, can I still be that other person that I was before I had you? And actually, I could, or do I just, you know, decide to dedicate myself to you, which is a wonderful thing to do, and you can do that in moments. But also, I think our kids need us to be us. Like, that is a really important thing to show them, isn't it, when as they grow up, that you're a person, your own person, and I don't know, that you're dynamic and have needs and wants and like talents and
yeah, absolutely. Things. And I don't know if you do win many prizes later on as well when they're pulling away and they have their independence, and if you're very, very invested in everything that they're doing and you've sort of not left much for yourself, I think that can be quite a scary time. It's probably a tough time anyway, but I think particularly if you haven't given yourself space, and it doesn't have to mean working in a conventional way, but anything that's just, as you say, like makes you feel like you, I think it's healthy to have that. And being a little bit selfish for yourself is a good thing. And also sometimes they kind of go swinging and out of tandem. Like when your parents were taking you to the folk festivals, obviously that was part of what they were doing, what they loved. So that's their passion. But then they share it with you, and then you can kind of, they could have their own fun and also bring you along for the ride. And that's all really lovely. And when we were talking before we started recording, you sent me an email saying about your other half and how you, it was quite similar to Richard and I, and that you got together quite quickly. So what was, that was quite a fast romance, was it?
Yes, yeah. So I was actually married in a previous life, or, you know, feels like a previous life. And then that didn't feel right anymore. And then I met Ainsley through a project, through a work project, when I was singing some songs with the show. And he was doing the animation for the show. And I met him, and I had actually seen him on TV when I was a teenager. He was on a TV show. Singing, and so I was like, oh, it's you. I used to watch you when I was a teenager, and I was thinking, Anna used to fancy you, but that would be it. I'm a grown up now, and you know, things have changed. That would be a silly thing to say, so I never said that. I mean, I've said it now, but
you've let him know finally,
you know. And actually, I didn't feel what I feel for him now. When I met him, I just thought, oh, that's funny, I know who you are. And we got on so well, and I just really wanted to be his friend. And then as I got to know him, I didn't see him for a while, and then we ended up meeting at Edinburgh Festival through friends, and then suddenly it was just like, phew, explosion. It was like, right, this is the thing. This is the intense thing I've been looking for, I think. And then suddenly I was pregnant as well, which was quite intense when you first meet somebody.
How fast after the Edinburgh Festival?
How fast after the Edinburgh Festival?
Let's see if it's the same time frame.
So that was the end of August, and I had Ren the following September.
Okay. So probably after you're dating like 4 months or something.
What about you?
So my mum, she was 3 months after meeting my stepdad, they found out they're having my brother. And with me and Richard, we'd known each other before, but then we found out we're having a baby after 6 weeks, which was quite quite dramatic.
Was it stressful?
There were lots of things about lots of stuff that was going on that was stressful, but weirdly, something in the middle of it wasn't really that stressful about the baby. I think in a weird way, it was sort of like, well, of course that's happening as well. There was so much going on at the time because we'd been touring together, and we became really good friends. Same sort of thing as you, actually. I just realised, like, I always wanted to share things with Richard first and hear what he thought about things. So we didn't start dating for a long time. And then when we did, we kept it really quiet because we thought, we don't really want people being like, oh my God, you guys are dating now after being in a band together. And then when we found out we were having a baby, I had to quickly like phone around all my friends and be like, you know that guy that is in my band? Well, we've been on some dates, it's going really well, and we're having a baby. But I was also getting myself out of a very stressful previous relationship that had finished, but I was still sort of tied in with work things. It was just like a lot going on. Oh, and I just released the first single of my second album as well.
Wow.
So it was quite a lot going on, really. And then when Sonny arrived, he was born quite early. So we'd only been going out for 8 months when we had our baby. But you know what? Sometimes that kind of thing of everything just kind of going rah, at the beginning, it sort of forms the bedrock for whatever happens afterwards. And I always liked the fact that we were a sort of family from the get-go. I think that was a nice thing. And then for the rest of the time, you've got this small person along for the ride.
Me and Ainsley always say we're good at the big stuff. It's like we did something really big first. Yeah. And actually, I don't know, you could be with somebody for 10 years and then like plan to have a baby, and then, you know, you don't know until you're in. I know you can get an idea of whether you've got the same, like, you know, morals and like, you know, probably going to have the same parenting views and stuff, but actually until you get into the thick of it, you don't know how you're gonna get along with it. And sometimes these things are just the right things, aren't they? Mine definitely, you know, I'm so happy with how things turned out. And I just knew as soon as I was pregnant, I just felt like this connection to my baby. And I thought, right, okay, I kind of know what to do now. I mean, I'm not saying I know how to be a mum, but I just had this feeling of like it being right.
Well, that's lovely. And sometimes as well, there's lots about parenthood, new parenthood, that's really daunting. But when I had Sonny, I did feel like this overwhelming feeling of like, oh, it's that person. And he just happens to be a baby when I meet him. So I've got to obviously figure out how to look after and take care of a baby. But the kernel of who he was, I just could sort of see that person even from when he was really small, which is quite funny, really. And it actually, there's a lot about how he was really early on that he's still, I mean, he's about to be 18, and there's so much of him that has been there. Like, I think of sometimes people a bit like trees, you know, when you get the lines that are coming out. So, you know, you can see that the ages, you know, you're going through the ages and through seasons, but actually the sort of kernel, like the bit that's at the core of someone, has just sort of been there for the whole time.
That's so interesting. Like, that's really interesting to hear you say that, actually, because I feel like Ren is just Ren. I'm like, you're not like me. You're not like, I thought, that's what I was surprised about having a child. I thought he was just going to be a reflection of me, which is maybe like really self-involved. But it's like, oh, no, you're just totally you already.
Yeah, well, I think especially with your first, you're just looking constantly for like the reflections, like, what do I recognise here? What's, oh yes, that's like me. And then things merge and you're like, eh? That's totally not like me. And then you're like, is it you? Is it like you? You know, and then you're like, oh no, it's just totally their own person. And it's really brilliant, all that stuff, actually. And I remember my dad even saying that when I was a kid, he'd go, well, you're a bit like your mum and a bit like me, but actually you're mostly just yourself. And at the time I would be like, well, duh. But now I kind of get why he was impressing that on me, but also was quite, you know, joyful about it himself, because actually that's one of the like things that's really exciting. Like, who are you? Yeah. Tell me who you are. And how is music involved in Ren's life? I suppose creativity, because if your other half does, I mean, you sent me a link to a beautiful stop frame animation, which I'll actually put the link in the blurb for this, because I really thought it was really beautiful.
I was gonna say thanks, but I didn't do it.
It's gorgeous. And I just think as well, what a lovely, so it's a very creative household, not just from the three of you, but from the concentric circles heading out as well with the family.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it's a strange juggle being two self-employed people with a child, but I'm enjoying kind of making our own path through that. And at the moment, we did live in the city, and then just before COVID, like a week before COVID, we moved to the countryside.
So whereabouts are you? Where am I speaking to you now?
I live in Northumberland.
So you're close to where you grew up?
Quite close, yeah. Quite close to where I grew up. I went to uni in Manchester, and I lived in Newcastle, and I've always sort of been a city person. But then as soon as I had a baby, I just thought, I've got no reason to be in the city. I just rent, so I can kind of go and live wherever I want. Let's see what it's like to live in the countryside. And actually, it was a really good move, because, well, partly Ren just gets up in the morning and runs around for all day, so that's good. But also Ainsley is making a film in the woods at the moment, so you have this idea like, I'm going to make a film and be outdoors, and it's going to be all affected by the light and the seasons and nature. And a year and a half in, he's sick of being in the woods because it's freezing. Yes. and part of the film, bless him, it's because we've got some woods just down the road from us, me and Ren will like make some soup, and then we'll go down the road, see what his dad's doing, stop and like sit. It's so cute. They sit on a log and drink soup together, and Ren like thinks he's like his dad. And so, yeah, I think
That's really sweet.
it's a nice little world for us.
I was thinking as well, like the pace of things sounds really nice, because if Ainsley's been doing, I mean, stop frame animation must be something that requires a lot of patience and consideration and care.
Yeah.
So when you said about the film in the woods, and then I was going to say that must take one. You said a year and a half later. I was thinking. So, you know, that's real dedication. But also the nature of what you do, and folk is also something where you're encouraged to really not rush and just take your time and give it all space and room. And I think actually that's something I could really learn from you guys, I expect. I think I'm a little bit too in a hurry all the time. It's good just to take your time and not rush.
Well, I know, but thanks. But I was thinking about, I was listening to some of your audio book, which I've been loving.
Oh, thank you.
And I was
my
thinking
voice in your ear.
Yeah, I love listening to audiobooks. It's great.
Yeah,
you don't
me too,
have to
actually.
Make any effort. You just press play. And I was listening to you talking about having ideas for like music videos and having ideas for this and having like clear like visions of things. And I think I really lack that. I need to be more decisive and I don't know if decisive is the word, or confident or creative, or I don't know what it is, but I feel like I really struggle with stuff like that. So it takes me a while. It's like, right, we've got to make a music video. What's it going to be about? I don't know. I think I could learn some things from you, and I really enjoy actually listening to other women, whether it's a podcast or whatever, or just chatting to people. I love to like get ideas from people and go, oh yeah, I want to be a bit more like that. Okay, I'm going to try and do that. That's a good idea. I think I learn in that way just by talking to people or listening. Like it's, I feed off that. So
yeah, but actually that's something that resonated with me when we spoke for your Winter Onliner. I remember you saying to me that with listening to things like the podcast, you think, you know, just listening to women have conversations has been something that you were really missing like through lockdown. And it's been nice to be able to access that through things like books and podcasts. And I thought, actually, yeah, I think that's been really significant for me as well. And I think it's, as you get older, it's nice to always keep looking outside yourself to sort of hear the wisdom of how other people do it and what works for them. And pick things up and think, oh yeah, I'd actually quite like to try a bit of that. And oh, that's an interesting perspective. And just kind of continue to sort of look outside myself and think, how can I kind of still continue to feel like I'm, you know, there's momentum in how I'm doing things really. And with the thing of the ideas for videos and stuff, I feel like quite often bands and everything, they're like any relationship. And you know, you need like the dynamic between the people to work. So if there's a gap in the market for someone who's more like one thing or another, then you'll probably grow to fill that space. But actually, if you've got someone in your group or in the dynamic of how you come up with your creative ideas, who's always been quite good at the visuals, you probably continue to look to them. It's quite hard to like shift on the dynamic, isn't it? We've all got like the role we play. Mm. And when I got put into my first solo album situation, I actually hadn't planned on being a solo artist. I come from a band, but suddenly it was all like about, okay, what do you want to do? But also I had this record label and they were quite old school and corporate. So the only space I could really like try and inject my personality was in visual stuff, because, you know, once the music's done, that's the next place where you can like set out your stall and try and articulate yourself. So I kind of really went for that because it made sense for me to exploit that really and say like, this is how I mean it to be heard, this is how I see myself. And I've always quite enjoyed it as well. I think I quite enjoy that stuff, but sometimes in music you can kind of, I don't know, sometimes when I'm trying to think of an idea, I might just play a song and close my eyes and just sort of think, right, this is a film, this is the opening to a film, what is happening, what can I see on the screen, like what's the cinema story. I mean, you know, some of the ideas I come up with are like really rubbish, but sometimes I constantly think, oh yeah, I like that.
Oh, I watched your video recently of the where you're playing a witch.
Oh yeah,
in the house.
Yeah,
that is so cool. I love that.
Thanks. That's brilliant. I love that. Well, funnily enough, That was from my album called Wanderlust. So I'd been making lots and lots of dance music and pop music. And then I went and did what I consider my folk album, because I thought, actually, in dance music and pop music, it's all very heady, and it's especially in dance music, you can't really tell any stories that are reflective. It's all about the here and now. So it's all, you know, lust or love or longing or frustration or whatever it might be, but it's like potent in that 3 minutes, that 4 minutes. Mm. But you couldn't start telling a story about anything other. So when I started working with Ed Harcourt, who I think you might have crossed paths with him, I'm not sure, but he, yeah. We weren't actually even thinking of doing an album, and he said, like, what should we write about? And I was like, I want to write something I would never normally do. So we did this waltz in three time about a witch and her stealing a soul, and I was like, ah, now you can tell stories. And that became like that album. But I thought, how nice in your world you get to tell stories, but maybe, have you ever thought about doing a dance album? Just do something totally different.
I mean, I've always had like a dream that, like, you know, Portishead will just suddenly decide that they want me to be their singer or something.
Oh, yeah.
That would be great.
I can totally picture you in that whole musical landscape very easily.
But I don't know. I feel like I'm only just starting to, in my 30s, I'm only just starting to become a bit braver in terms of, I feel like in my 20s, I had to like sort of be sure of who I was. And that stopped me from growing, or like, you know, finding out who I was, maybe because of fear. Whereas I think in my 30s, I'm just enjoying learning to be comfortable in my own skin, and with that comes the like admitting that I don't know everything and that I'm not complete and whole, and that's like really freeing.
Definitely. And I wonder as well if that partly comes as well with the fact that The Unthanks, right from the beginning, was so critically acclaimed, which is obviously like the holy grail for musicians. You want that thing of, you know, the critics saying this is really wonderful. But with that comes this slight pressure of maintaining that surety of step sometimes.
It's funny because I think that, yeah, when we started out, I loved singing and was thrilled to be doing what I was doing, but I wasn't very ambitious, because I hadn't really thought about it that much. And I think I didn't feel pressured when we were first a band, because I was just doing like the only thing I knew how to do and hadn't thought about the next step. And I didn't also, like, I hadn't trained to be a singer and never learnt to sing or perform, and I feel like I've learnt over the years, and the more I do it, the more I want, and the more I reflect on it, I suppose, which is a shame in a way. I mean, it's good to reflect, it means that I'll get better at it and I'll work on my craft, but it also makes me more self-conscious. And it's just something about being, okay, I'm a folk singer, so does that mean that I have to be a folk singer forever? Mm. Or does that mean I could sing a different style of music? Like, is that allowed? Like, I suppose it's allowed if I allow myself.
Definitely, that is definitely the answer, I think. Yeah, it's whatever feels right for you, completely. If you do it because it resonates, then it's completely the right thing. But I think the nice thing about, I suppose, the genre that or in, as I wonder if it's maybe, it's something that in my mind, it's sort of something that celebrates experience and wisdom. So it must help with the path of the idea of being an older folk singer. It's sort of seen as like completely perfect and lovely. Like, that's not a kind of thing to be scared of. Whereas in,
I know what you mean,
my genre, like being an older pop singer is like, how are you gonna straddle that?
Yeah. I was just thinking about that. I was reading about, I don't know why I was reading about Madonna, but I was randomly reading about Madonna this morning.
It's hard not to read about Madonna at some point. She's still doing what she does.
She's still doing what she does. And she's talking about, like, you know, what a man's world it is, and how men are allowed to do this and do this, and they're allowed to be all these different things. They're allowed to be older. But are women? We're not. I know what you mean. It's like, you know, the older I get, I think, you know, is this, I'm going to be a singer forever. I think that I could skip to being 80 as a folk singer, and it like that's a good age to be a folk singer, isn't it? But I don't know about like 50s. I don't know what a 50-year-old folk singer. Don't know where I'm going to fit into that. But everything's changing, isn't it? I mean,
but then maybe that's quite an interesting age to pick as for whatever you're doing creatively in a way. 50s. I don't have an image of that yet. I'm sort of just working out 40s. I'm going to be 43 in April. So I'm sort of getting to grips with what this decade means to me, really.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, 50s is like, oh, that's a whole other kettle of fish. I haven't really worked that one out yet. I'll just have to figure out when I get there, I think.
But do you feel like 30s is better than 20s? Or do you feel like 40s is better than 30s?
I really loved my 30s, I have to say. I really, really loved it. I think 40s seems to be like a really... I'm enjoying it more than I thought I would. When I first hit 40, I was like, what is that? I don't really have an image in my head. Like, I always saw 30s is when you could start to really reap a little bit of the seeds you've sown in your 20s. Like, you sort of can bed in a bit, and I felt a bit more sure of myself. But 40s just seems to be a nice thing where I'm trying to be less apologetic about things and, I suppose just trying to... keep looking outside myself, I think, because I do think that 40s can be a time when in your life certain doors might be closing, and it's about how you deal with those things coming to an end. And I've seen in some people where they start to get a little bit more calcified, and some of their maybe thoughts that I don't think are very helpful, like it might be like if they're bitter about something or regretful about something, and I really don't want that to be part of how I continue in my 40s. I don't want any of that baggage, thanks. It doesn't look like much fun. And I think if you're not careful, it makes you turn into quite a grumpy old person.
It's good to like look around and say, I don't fancy being that version. Oh, how about that version?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But luckily I have got a lot of good examples of like older women in my life that are very good adverts for getting older. And I've always quite liked getting older, actually. I think getting older is pretty cool.
I'm enjoying it.
Yeah, it's nice.
When you're young, like it's like when you're a teenager, you think it's the worst thing.
Yeah,
you
like feel sorry for older people. Like, yes. Oh, I'm sorry, you're. I'm sorry, you're 38. Oh, 43. Ow, that must really be difficult for you. You're probably very jealous of my youth.
It's a terrible thing to say, but like I remember thinking that, like, oh, it must be awful being you.
I know. And then you get older and you're like, you know what, it's totally cool. It's actually fine. Brilliant. Yeah. And I don't mind if I'm suddenly old enough to be people's mothers, like that's cool with me. Don't let the kids know. Let them think it, they're quite ignorant. It's fine.
Well, they're looking at us now going, oh dear, them too.
Yeah. I've just single-handedly, like, any under 25 demographic I had for the podcast, they just unfollow, delete.
Don't know, maybe they're all switched on than I was.
No, but hopefully it's like a nice thing to think that getting older is like not all bad. I think it's a nice feeling. And I think, like you said before, that thing of like a lot of that stress of being younger and worrying about what other people think and all that, I'm determined to like outgrow any remaining overhangs of that. It's taking a while. I'm someone that's still quite a people pleaser, so you know, it's like I kind of have to like be better at like, not everybody has an opinion about what I do about stuff anyway, so don't worry if you don't leave everybody happy. They might not have been thinking about you in the first place. I mean, I know you know, you got pregnant with Ren fairly quickly, but is it something you always saw on the horizon? Did you like the idea of being a mum?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Since I was young, I've always just thought that was the plan. And, I always wanted to be a mum. I just think it's the most wonderful opportunity that I've ever had in my life, really, to see a little person grow into a bigger person. It's wonderful. I love the relationship. Yeah, I'm quite tactile and I like having a friend, whether it's like at school or on tour or, you know, I like having a buddy, a little partner in crime, friend to just hang out with. And I love that about Ren being three. Like, we hang out now and it's like, oh, should we do this together? And, you know, it's, yeah, I really enjoy that companionship, I suppose.
Definitely. Yeah. And there's a nice line in a movie, Lost in Translation, where he says, Bill Murray's character says about having kids, and he says, you have these kids and then when they grow up, they turn out to be the nicest people you've ever met. That really stayed with me. I thought, oh, that's such a nice way of putting it. And I think that's, I put that beautiful in my book, actually, because I really liked it. But that thing of, yeah, the little companion and watching someone grow is pretty magical. And seeing things through their eyes is really, I think for people like us that are lucky enough to have creativity at the heart of what we do, seeing things in that fresh way is really great. But was there ever a part of you that was, I mean, did it affect your voice, actually? I wondered if that's why I didn't want to ask you that.
Oh, I don't think so. Did it affect yours?
Yeah, weirdly, I got more high notes, which I think is quite unusual, but my range got bigger. And that's amazing. That was really, really cool, actually. I was quite happy about that. Because it used to be a bit limited, and then I suppose it might be coincidental, but I don't think so. It felt like it was related. And there's always a bit after I've had a baby as well, when my voice is really quite thin, but I think that might be because I've had to have operations to have them. I've had C-sections, and it just takes a while to get the strength back. But then after a while, it kind of comes back to normal. But
right.
Yeah, it definitely affected my voice, I think.
Wow. No, it didn't. I mean, that makes me realise that it didn't, because I had hearing you talk about that, because I didn't even consider it.
Did you ever think that you would, was it ever a question mark about whether you would continue singing and performing?
I mean, I have moments where I think, is there something else I should be doing? Should I be doing something that's about where I live? That's a little niggle in my head that like to be part of a community. Maybe it's my folky festival childhood, like coming back to me. But I don't know. Yeah, that's a little niggle in my head. Should I be doing? Would I feel like? Would it feel good to me to contribute something to like my community? But I suppose community, the word community is like, you know, could be thought of in loads of different ways, couldn't it? And
definitely. And you've got a community that can, a travelling community is still community, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I think I'll always be a singer. And even if it's, you know, me and Mitch will talk about this. Me and my sister, we say, whatever happens, we'll always sing together. And that's, that, you know, whether it's a really, really small gig and it's not very often, I feel like I'll always do it. And for as long as I've got appetite for it and ideas and what we were talking about before about singing different types of music, I've just started to write songs. Well, I've always written them a little bit in private, but I've written a song for our new album, which feels like a leap. So that feels like a new world to explore. So I'm definitely not giving up just now.
No, that's lovely. And when is the new album on its way then? What's the next thing?
I'm not sure when it's out, but it was touring in the spring. So cool. Hopefully it'll be out around then. And get to do that again. I can't wait to tour.
Yeah.
I mean, I can and I can't. It's just, it feels like really far away. But you've been touring this year, haven't you?
I've done.
Or last year?
Last year, I ended up doing some festivals, yeah. And I did a support tour, and then I've got my band tour in just over 6 weeks. We're going away for all of March doing a tour, UK tour, which I'm
excited about. Is that for a new album?
No, so this is a sort of greatest hits kitchen disco tour. So I'm taking that on the road, which was supposed to happen last year and got postponed to now. But it's like a very feel good gig and playing some really lovely venues. So I'm really looking forward to it and just kind of bedding in. I'm looking forward to like just bedding into the tour and just giving myself over to it a little bit and focusing. Because I think the last little while has felt like trying to do lots of different things and sometimes from home and just kind of like lots of things. We were like trying to keep the momentum going. So it'd be nice just to go and just do one thing solidly for a month and just be like, I am on tour and that's what I'm doing now. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it actually.
It's such a great... Do you love touring? I love touring.
I do, actually, yeah. I really do. And I'm lucky enough to have Richard's in the band with me. My brother's playing drums with me again, which he did before, but he's back. And, you know, I've got friends in the band. So it's like a really nice atmosphere as well. I can really enjoy that. And it's fun. I've always really loved it. I like it. And I'm singing some songs I haven't sung for a really long time. So that's quite fun too. Mm. So when in the spring are you going? In sort of April time?
Yeah, April, May. I think April, May, June and July were kind of in Lovely. And out of touring time. So I'll be free.
I hope you're coming somewhere. Yeah, exactly.
Poor Ainsley, stuck looking after Ren.
Well, you know what, it's funny, I had a little wobble just before I went to do some work last week when I was going in the studio and I was away for 4 nights. And I said to my mum, oh, I feel really bad, the kids are so used to having me around and I've really been liking it as well. And she was like, don't worry, it's what we do and they'll be fine. And I was like, yes, it's what I do and they'll be fine, it's what I do and they'll be fine. And of course they're completely fine. It's just, yeah, it's nice for me to go and actually give myself over to my work rather than trying to squeeze it into all the gaps that happen around everything else.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a totally different experience, isn't it, when you can just focus on that one thing.
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, I'll have to come and see you. I'd love to come and see you.
I'd love to come and see you.
Yay, okay, perfect. We'll do that. And also, I wish I'd seen that gig when it was just the three voices. So I hope you'd get to do a tour like that again one day, because that sounds really incredible. How did you set the... Did you have something to give you a note at the beginning of things? Or were you just doing it kind of...
Just have a little pitch pipe.
Yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, so just a note.
Did anyone actually ever talk through it? Or were the people really good at listening?
Our audience are really good at listening. I mean,
they are.
We've done the odd gig. We once had a gig in Sligo in Ireland. And this was years and years ago. And the venue was a really small venue. But it had double booked with a stag do. Nobody could hear any of the songs that night. But
wow.
These days, generally, everyone is super quiet. Actually, I can send you a thing. So the first, that first tour we did with Ren when he was 7 months old and Ainsley came, Ainsley made a film of us, just a documentary film of us singing and touring with the babies. I'll send you it. It's quite sweet.
Yes, please. I think I'd love to see that. That's a nice thing. Yeah, it is a nice memory. And then have you had any of those parties yet, like the family parties where everybody has to get up and sing or do something? Has Ren been part of that yet?
Has he been part of it? Well, he got a microphone for Christmas, he's definitely getting into the...
Well, you're taking it professionally. It's like...
And my sister's
he's not going to be a quiet singer. He's got amplification.
It's attached to Bluetooth,
You only rehearse 2 or 3 hours a day, it's fine.
He does like singing. My sister's great, actually. She's just brilliant with little kids, and she... I went away for the weekend last weekend, first time without... Ren, with Ainsley, and I got back and she taught him a song. They'd done a craft workshop and she taught him this song. It was so sweet.
Wow.
So yeah, he's definitely getting a taste for it.
Oh, that's lovely. And also, she sounds like an awesome babysitter. And is she free this weekend? Hey guys, I'm now in the park. I'm watching Jesse playing with a friend. I don't actually know where Ray is right now. Little scan. Nah. It's all right. He's old enough to not run off. The worst thing they do when they're that age is climb up something they can't get down very easily, or just something they can get down easily, but they look like they can't, so that scares me. But Aaron and I have just seen Ray. He's popped out the bottom of a little tower. He's fine. I'm having a nice little run around. It's actually really nice. It's nice to be in the park. And I hope you enjoyed my chat with Becky. I just remember feeling very, very sort of calm and peaceful after I spoke to her. I think I was really impressed by the pace of her life. It sounded like something I could, I don't know, take something from, really. I think I can be a bit too hasty and impatient. I'd like to be a bit slower sometimes. But I also remember those days when I had just had my eldest, my first, and those times spent just sitting with him and playing, and for a little while our world was quite dinky like that. Just spending, I'm not saying Becky's life is dinky, you know what I mean? Those days we just got one child and you're just sort of on a little time frame with them on those days where you just have lunch together after nursery and it's all very peaceful. I remember being like that with Sonny. It's nice. I think now I've had too many kids for that at the moment. Well, actually, I did have a nice lunch with Mickey today, so maybe those days are not totally gone. Oh, the sun's come out. That's nice. I've put a link in the bio to Becky's partner, Ainsley's amazing animation. It's really lovely. It's only a couple of minutes long and it's really moving. I really loved it. Stayed with me. So have a look at that. And I won't see you for a little while now. It's the end of the series. So look after yourselves. And I don't know. I'm trying to think of something sort of fairly philosophical to say, really. But I think it's just more of the same. Just take joy where you find it. Take time for yourself. Enjoy having lots of conversations with people you care about. That's what I'm planning on keeping doing to keep my sanity for the moment. And if all else fails, have a little dance to something you love. But in the meantime, please do put your comments below. I do read through every single comment. If there's anyone you'd like me to speak to for the next series, I've got a few lined up already. But please, please, please let me know, because some of my favourite guests have been people that haven't been my suggestion. And the other thing you can go and do is go and see a gig. That's good for the soul. So the Unthanks are on tour in April, and I'm on tour at the moment. And it's really fun, actually. What we've done is brought the whole kitchen disco to life. So I'm actually seeing people and having a disco with them. And it has been really, really good fun. It's exactly what I hoped for. So if that sounds like something that might tickle your fancy, see you there. In the meantime, lots and lots of love. I hope the blossom is starting to come out wherever you are too. See you soon. Oh, me again. Forgot to say thank you to Richard for editing everything that I've done with all the podcasts. Thank you to Claire Jones for being the most amazing and supportive producer. And thank you to Ella May for her amazing artwork. That is the podcast family, and I couldn't do it without them. So thank you to them. And of course, thank you to you for lending me your ears each and every time you come to call. All right, that's love. See you in a bit. Bye-bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at hellofresh.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.